The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. The Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we keep yakking and yakking about food for the poor. You'd like to know, hey, who runs that organization? Well, we tracked him down. He wasn't easy to find, but his name is Ed Raines, and he's right here. Ed, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Eric. Great to be on your show.
Of course, I'm lying. You were very easy to find. In fact, it was you who found me. But I want to ask you, Ed, how long have you been the head of Food for the Poor? Because you're a fairly recent addition to this longstanding organization.
Yeah, so I've been here almost 4 years, but as president CEO since the beginning of 2020.
So where are you from originally, Ed?
Well, I started off life growing up in London and came to college in the U.S. and never left. So
because you've got a little bit of that English accent there. Well, look, my audience already knows about Food for the Poor, but let's, for those who don't, who might be tuning in right now, I have to say there are almost no organizations that we work with the way we do with you guys. CSI is the only one that's popping into my mind, that people that we have vetted, not just we, the Eric Metaxas Show, but the entire Salem Radio Network, from Mike Gallagher to the next mayor of California, Larry Elder, to Hugh Hewitt, to my dear, dear friend, Dennis Prager. We believe in the work you're doing at Food for the Poor and the way that you do it, feeding the poorest of the poor in the world, Haiti, other places. So we really believe in you, and periodically we partner with you. We're doing that with you this month, obviously. And so I want to say, before we even get into the conversation, folks, you go to my website. It's the radio website, MetaxasTalk.com. You'll see the banner. All the exciting details are there. EricMetaxas.com is my website. MetaxasTalk.com is the radio website, since we talk on the radio. And if you want to call, the number is 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE. So, Ed Raines, tell us, what are we looking at right now? You've been the head of Food for the Poor since roughly this horrific pandemic messed with the world's economy and everything. So what's going on right now?
Well, thanks, Eric. I mean, one of the things we have to say is that the COVID hit that we saw in the U.S. has been replicated in the 17 countries that we support around the Caribbean and Latin America. And just as we saw, you know, the food crisis has been the number one problem. People suddenly finding themselves without work. And in many of the countries, the devaluation of their currencies has also ensured that they are faced with limited access to food, and the food that they can find is at a greater cost. So their burden is greater than ever. And then, you know, we're in the business of sort of helping from a relief anyway. So you add in, you know, what we typically expect in a given year with the hurricanes and the flooding and so forth. So, you know, think about last year, had COVID going on, and then those two hurricanes that slammed into Central America. We were there to provide support. But it is this is a moment in time where, you know, we are very concerned for the countries that we're supporting. Food is the number one problem.
Well, it's hard, again, for America. There's always a challenge because we are so blessed in this nation. Even the poorest people in this nation have ways to get food. So the idea that there are people struggling who don't have the most basic medicine are dying for want of medicine that none of us would ever think about having a problem getting, that's why you all are doing what you're doing. How many years has Food for the Poor been doing this kind of thing?
Well, it's 39 years, and you're quite right. I mean, the medicines are a part of our program. We partner with organizations to provide us with medicines and medical supplies. And when you think about the plight of someone in extreme poverty, they have multiple needs. So we talk about, you know, all of those, whether it's food, it's access to water, it's shelter, housing. We built 85,000 homes through the generosity of donors over the 39 years in many of those countries, about nine of those countries. But all of these things press upon the problems of poverty. And so trying to be able to provide sort of a full array of solutions for those people is imperative. We always start with food. That's why we're Food for the Poor. That's how we began. But we very quickly realized that a full array of solutions was required. You know, imagine what it's like if you absolutely have nothing. I mean, we talk about, you know, relative poverty within the U.S., and there are many services that help those in extreme need here in this country. But that safety net just is not present in the countries we're talking about. So, you know, if somebody doesn't act on their behalf, nothing's going to happen.
It's an amazing thing, because in this country, in the United States, we have the luxury of arguing which is better, the public sector or the private sector. Should government be doing this? Should private individuals be doing this? It's almost comical that we argue about how to get it done. And there are countries where it's not even a thought that the government would get it done. The governments tend to be tremendously corrupt. They couldn't care less about the poor and their misery. They don't have a Christian worldview. In America, even pagans have a Christian worldview when it comes to the poor. They don't know where it came from, but of course it comes out of the Bible, caring for those who can't care for themselves, feeding those who are hungry, basic ideas for centuries. And in countries like Haiti, as you describe, and others, the governments are so broken down. There's a kind of anarchy and a misery. And it would be wonderful if we could come in there and revive the entire nation, but we can't do that. But the people are there, they are suffering, and what we can do is what Food for the Poor does. So it's just a beautiful thing. Tell us also, I mean, I know I keep telling my audience that for $111, you feed somebody, you would feed three kids for 6 months. That's how you leverage the American dollars, which is nothing less than astonishing. I mean, when somebody thinks of $111, it's nothing to an American, and then you think it can feed three starving kids for 6 months. So how is it that Food for the Poor can do those types of things?
Well, there's several reasons. When you think about how we're set up, we have extensive logistics and distribution capability. That's how we get the relief for the containers. It's usually about 4,000 containers a year get sent out to these countries. And the most important part of the equation is how we use the churches in these countries. So it is really our sort of secret sauce, if you want to say it that way. Our Christian ministry here works through those churches, all denominations, and we're able to distribute through those churches. Of course, it's, you know, the church isn't charging us a fee to do this. And that's getting to more people through that network. I mean, in Haiti alone, we probably have 3,000 outlets for the distribution that we start off in our two warehouses. They go to 14 distribution centers, and those distribution centers are typically in large churches, and then for further redistribution. So it's an incredible network. You have to have that network in place to make a difference.
Well, see, this is what I keep trying to say. We're just going to keep you for another minute here, but I just want to say that this is the key. This is why we, all the other Salem radio partners, work with Food for the Poor, because you all have this infrastructure and the relationships with churches. That is the key to everything. You're able to leverage our few dollars dramatically. And I know this. I've heard about this before. I've looked into this before. So when people think, well, what can I do? Well, folks, whatever you give to Food for the Poor, it is dramatically magnified. I want to say again, please go to our website. It's metaxastalk.com. You'll see the banner. It gives you all the details there. And I also want to say to anybody who's listening, anybody crazy enough to want to have dinner with me, Eric Metaxas, for a $10,000 gift to Food for the Poor, and many of you have done it in the past, I'm asking you to do it again, please. I'd be delighted to meet you in a city of our mutual convenience, have dinner with you. We can include whomever you like. $1,000 gift. You can have a visit to the studio with your whole family or anyone you like. Or if you hate New York, you can find friends in New York and say, hey, you go in our place. Whatever works for you. We've got a number of other things, grand prizes. We want to bless you and encourage you. It is a remarkable opportunity that God gives us to use what he has blessed us with to bless others. And Food for the Poor and Ed Rain, I just want to say thank you for allowing us to participate with you in doing God's work. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us on your show.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their three-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Hey there, folks. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. As you know, on this program, I never want to talk about anything controversial. We're all about unity on this program. We don't talk about vaccines. We don't talk about the election fraud. We don't talk about those things. We want to unify. And today, in that spirit, I'm interviewing Mark Morano. He has a book out called Green Fraud, and he means that in the best way. Green Fraud. Why the Green New Deal is even worse than you think. Mark Morano, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eric. I'm happy to be here today. Appreciate it.
The Green New Deal, when I heard about it the first time, I remember it was like when I heard about defund the police. You thought, there are some things that are so astronomically silly that there's no way to comprehend them seriously. You just think, that person's crazy and no one will take it seriously. And then you find out maybe you're wrong. We're living in really crazy times. That's the headline, Mark Morano, because the Green New Deal is just, it's mind bending. It's mind bending to me that anyone could take it seriously. But talk to us about it. You've written a book called Green Fraud. Why is this even worse than we think?
Well, the Green New Deal implies, number one, that we have a climate emergency, climate crisis, that we have 12 years by which to act, and the clock's ticking. I think we're down to just a little over 10 years now. Another one of these tipping points. And by the way, in the book, I trace the first climate tipping point to 1864, where we were warned of climatic excess unless we did something. So these tipping points have been around for centuries, literally. But the Green New Deal, even if we faced a climate emergency, they claim, which we don't even face really measurable climate influence by mankind. I mean, that's the thing. There's hundreds of factors that influence the climate. You can't distinguish them from natural variability. We were probably warmer during the Roman warming period when Jesus was on Earth, when during the time of Jesus Christ was born. And the medieval warming period, we were probably warmer according to peer-reviewed studies.
But didn't it, wait a minute, didn't the world end around that time in the Middle Ages?
That's right. What do you mean by end?
Didn't they have some kind of a climate disaster to wipe out the population? Actually, maybe not, because here we are. I got to tell you, I remember hearing this kind of stuff in the 80s when I was in college. These predictions that were just, you know, really dire predictions. And then time would pass, nothing would happen, and nobody would mention it again. So you do get it is a little bit like the boy crying wolf. But what you just said, to me, the most important piece is that no matter what the weather is doing, you're saying that it's simply not a fact that human activity is the main cause. So what a lot of these people are screaming about, they make it sound like we are all doing something that we could change and that would solve the problem. And we don't know that. So they're asking us to spend many, many billions, trillions of dollars to do something without a clear outcome. Isn't that really the main point?
Yeah, I mean, the gist of this whole climate movement is that humans are driving this catastrophe. We have to act. You have senators like Chuck Schumer who said, had we done more on climate, these hurricanes wouldn't be as bad. Here's what I mean by there's no human influence. On hurricanes, floods, droughts, tornadoes, sea level, there's no human signal, meaning that actually all the extreme weather events, even in the buried in the United Nations reports, even buried in the national climate assessment that the media likes to hype, none of that is on any increasing trend. They're either no trend or declining trends. We had record low hurricanes. We had record low tornadoes. Global droughts are showing no trend. Global floods, no matter what weather event, sea levels are the same levels they were 80 years ago. Obama, a scientist came out, Steve Koonin from the Obama administration, has a whole book out detailing how nothing alarming is going on with the climate. Temperature, you hear about the hottest year. None of that it's within hundreds of a degree difference between previous hottest year records.
Hundreds, but as I mentioned, if we were a degree.
You can't even measure the difference. And it's just within the margin of error. That's the amazing thing. So back to the Green New Deal, just real quick. Even if we face this catastrophe, even if humans were driving it, the Green New Deal, by their own architects' own admission, and people like John Kerry have publicly admitted this multiple times, even if the U.S. went to zero emissions, which isn't even part of the Green New Deal, really, we would have no influence on global CO2 level, let alone potentially global temperature and or climate, because China, India, the rest of the world is continuing to develop, and the Green New Deal would do nothing for emissions, let alone temperature. So there's no cost benefit analysis. It's basically saying we face an emergency. We have to turn Marxist socialist in order to save ourselves. And that's not going to save anything from a crisis we don't even face.
And obviously, India and China are what? They're about 2.5 billion people. And what is going on in those countries dwarfs what is happening here. So why is the United States always painted as the bellwether when that's just not true?
The United States is picked on. I guess if you go by per capita, we have the largest carbon footprint per person, and that's what's getting them. And the reason, the title of my book is Why the Green New Deal is Worse Than You Think, it's because of the COVID lockdowns. Because just if you go to Climate Depot this week, Eric, I have multiple stories on COVID scientists claiming now is the time to do the same thing for climate. They are openly using the phrase climate lockdowns. We have International Energy Agency, by the way, I'm saying this, no, there's no heat. It's not hot because of global warming. I'm here in the Washington, D.C. buffers. It's a hot day today. But the COVID scientists are pushing the climate lockdowns. International Energy Agency report, from in a peer-reviewed journal, are calling for the shrinking, particularly of Americans. They want to shrink our energy. They want to limit our mobility and travel. They want to take away private automobile ownership. They want to limit our airline flights. They want to radically reduce our energy use. They want to degrow our economy, planned recessions. We are now facing a morphing of the COVID lockdowns to the climate lockdowns.
Okay, I've not heard that before. And if ever you needed proof that there is a socialist Marxist agenda behind this, there we have it. I mean, the idea that they would take a very bad idea with regard to medicine and science and move it over to the climate. On what basis would somebody, again, this is preposterous and we should laugh at it, but on what basis would somebody conceivably be suggesting something like a climate lockdown? Why would somebody stay home to help the climate, theoretically?
Well, literally you'd stay home because if you travel to work, even if you take public transit, you're using energy, you're doing commercialism, you're doing spending. The vision, and it's laid out, I have a whole two chapters in the book on this, on green fraud. The vision is the World Economic Forum, the meet in Davos, Switzerland. And their idea is the wealthy sort of global people, everyone from Prince Charles, John Kerry's all in, the United Nations is all in, Bill Gates, etc. Their vision, and it's actually they produced a video, you will own nothing and you'll be happy. It's a vision of the year 2030 under a Green New Deal style global technocratic lockdown of our lives. Everything you'll want, your rent, food will be delivered to your home by drone. Your business will be conducted on a computer screen. This is their vision, because the idea they're actually saying, and I quote climate activists in the book, it will be not in under a declared climate emergency, which Joe Biden is being urged to declare in the United States, which would give him emergency powers, much like the blue state Democratic governors. You would only be able to fly when it's, quote, morally justifiable, unquote. You'd have to justify to a government official. This is well thought out. They're talking about maximum speed limits. They're talking about thermostat controls in your home. We're already seeing this happen in Texas with smart thermostat. It's an aspect of basically micromanaging every aspect of your life by an administrative state, because A, we can't handle our own health. B, we can't handle the health of the planet. So we need experts with PhD, master's degree, public health bureaucracy to come in and micromanage every aspect of our life. Tell us when we can fly, when we can drive, where we can go, how long. Just like under COVID, you had stay at home orders, curfews, essential services only, no backyard barbecues, no funerals, no weddings. That was the dream of every public health bureaucrat. Moving that to climate is the dream of every climate activist. In fact, John Kerry, Greta Thunberg, the United Nations have all praised COVID lockdowns as incredible parallels to how we should fight climate.
And you know, even better if we'd all just commit suicide. My goodness, how that would really yeah. marvelously reduce the carbon footprint. We need to think about that. To save the planet. Now, why would we save the planet? For whom? I don't know, because we'll all be dead. It's almost funny, Mark, because it really is self-defeating. It's a snake, swallowing, biting its own tail, so to speak. It refutes itself when you look at it logically.
It does, but no one looks at it logically. They look at it ideologically, and they look at it emotionally. So that's why when you argue with a climate activist, they're embedded in their head is 97% of all scientists agree. So in their minds, they don't have to know an ounce of climate science. All they need to know is all scientists agree, and you're anti-science. You're a science denier if you disagree. Well, the 97% figure, which you'll hear from Al Gore upped it to 99% recently on CNN, just made up.
Is Al Gore still alive? I thought he was like floating in some kind of a saline tank. We're out of time for this segment, but we need our producers to look to find out, is Al Gore still among the living?
That's right.
The book is Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think, with a foreword by Mark Stein. Holy cow. We'll be right back. Hey, folks, have you thought about killing yourself to reduce your carbon footprint? It's something that all serious people are laughing about, and you should, too. Green Fraud is the book. Mark Morano, the author. Mark, I don't know what to say. Is Al Gore really still out there someplace? I think of him as kind of a manatee just sort of floating through the culture. He's out there someplace, but nobody knows where.
Well, Al Gore actually has been replaced mostly. Even people like Leonardo DiCaprio have been replaced. They've been replaced by the youth climate activists. And in short, the climate activists couldn't convince adults of a climate crisis, so they went after the children. And hey, they've had a lot of success. They've had kids around the world skipping school, kids suing the government for their climate future, demanding climate action, basically demanding Marxism be imposed in order to safeguard their future of the planet. But Al Gore, first film came out in 2006. And by the way, polar bears were the icon of that film, and polar bears are disappearing. They're disappearing from Al Gore's books and movies because Al Gore never mentioned them in his sequel from 2017 or in his new book, because polar bears are at or near historic population. They never counted so many, so he just conveniently wiped them off the table.
So the polar bears are having the last laugh. That's what you're telling us.
They are. But the thing about Gore is it's so quaint when you look at Gore. But his film came out in 2006. He talked about polar bears and sea level and carbon dioxide. He talked about carbon taxes and cap and trade. Now the whole climate debate has morphed to nuttiness. It's complete wackiness, Eric. People are worried about whether vehicle thefts are going to go up, barroom brawls, whether rapes are going to go up, whether we'll have too many redheaded kids or not enough redheaded kids. Now NASA scientists are coming out saying that climate change is caused by white supremacy. And until we get rid of white supremacy, we're never going to get rid of our extractive energy supply that's driving the climate crisis. So now the entire climate change debate has been invaded by identity politics. I have a whole chapter in the book on the wackiness of identity politics. You want to solve climate change today? Forget about carbon taxes. They want you to defund the police, and we have Green New Deal activists who want to abolish the police. That's the new climate solution.
What's interesting, though, is how all of these, what now we call them woke ideologies, they all merge. They kind of, I mean, this is intersectionality at its best. It's kind of like all the crazy stuff somehow migrates together, and so you're always talking about all these different things. In other words, it has nothing to do with science. Somehow now it's related to all of these other ideologies. So it's almost designed to be purely emotional, to get young people riled up, to tell them really to forget about the facts, except for the bullet points that you want them to know. I mean, the polar bear thing is hilarious. I mean, is it really? I just want to go back for a second. I mean, that was the thing. You said it in 2006 when Al Gore made his mockumentary. The polar bears, they were going extinct. They're swimming. It's sad. There's no ice for them to wear. And you're telling me now the polar bears are making a big comeback.
They are more than they've ever counted. And actually, even paleontologists, others have come out and said, given the history of the Earth's geologic climate, polar bears have survived much worse than they're even predicting with climate change, that there's just no threat. All they would do is move to land and back to ice. They're not under any threat. The population has, I think it's fivefold increase since the 1970s, a lot having to do with the hunting ban. But even just since Al Gore's film, there's been an unbelievable amount of new discoveries of polar bears. There are even indigenous people in the Arctic talk about how they're not endangered. Old tour guides talk about it. I mean, it's incredible. It's now almost universally accepted, but you know how they get you. This is how the climate activists work. When current reality fails to alarm or scare you, they make scarier and scarier predictions of the future. And so they can claim it's more dire than ever for the polar bears. You're like, how? There's more than ever? They'll say, well, our prediction now of the year 2070 is much worse than it was just a few years ago. So that's how they do it. It's a misdirection using these climate models, which don't account for half the variability in nature. And they can basically, doesn't matter what's actually happening in the system, as long as they make a scary prediction, they get funded, they get attention, they get scare reports, and they get lobbying efforts for their solutions like the Green New Deal.
Well, the book is Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. So what are, leftist socialists like AOC proposing? In other words, they're quite seriously proposing these things, and we have a fake president. I don't want to insult the fake president. He's legitimately phony. And the point is that he's in the White House when he's not at his home in Delaware. And he has been sucked in to advocating for some of these harmful socialist policies. I mean, it seems that way. You were alluding to it.
He's a figurehead. I mean, Biden is just sort of, he doesn't even, again, he ceded his entire administration over to these youth climate activists, to Bernie Sanders, to AOC, to write his climate agenda. He's now made every climate agency, every administration agency is administration, a climate agency. And that includes the Pentagon, State Department, Energy Department, you name it, Interior. Climate is first and foremost at their mission. So this is what they're doing. But what the Green New Deal wants to do is like essentially reset, build back better. They want to use the COVID lockdowns now. They're going after our diets. They're going after beef. They're going after any animal products. They're actively pushing for an end to modern farming, so much so that Bill Gates is now the largest landowner of farms in America. Now, don't believe me. This isn't some right-wing conspiracy. I have NBC News. Go to Climate Depot. NBC News did a whole thing on Bill Gates being the world's, America's largest farm landowner. He's now competing and taking away family farms from farmers who can't compete with the likes of Bill Gates. And what's their agenda? Bill Gates is pushing processed fake meat vegetable burgers, which even a CNN nutritionist said these aren't any good. It's like 26 different ingredients.
And the you know what I recommend? Nothing tastier than a polar bear steak. We'll be right back.
Sure.
Folks, welcome back. We're talking to the author of Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. Mark Morano is the author of best-selling author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. The foreword's by Mark Stein. Mark, you've been around this world for a while. Most Americans, you know, they're trying to live their lives. They care about the environment. You know, we all care about these things. What is it that has made folks like AOC just, you know, speed off of the cliff? Because some of the things that they're suggesting, everyone knows it's crazy. So who's buying into this? How is it that Biden is buying into this?
Well, it's become a mantra of a progressive Democratic Party. You have to be all in on the climate agenda. There's no way any major Democratic candidate for president, any senator, congressman could ever dissent on this. This isn't the old days. The 30 years ago, you had the pro-life Democrats on this. There's no big tent on climate or energy on the Democratic Party. So they are all in lockstep. And the most devastating thing about this is during Trump's 2019, the second year of Trump's presidency, with his policies, we achieved for the first time since 1952, when Harry S. Truman was president, American energy dominance, more energy exports than imports, more energy, less energy consumption than production. In other words, we were producing more. We were the world's largest oil and gas producer. We were booming. No more need for endless wars in the Middle East. No more need for oil from Venezuela, the Middle East. No way to rely on Russia. Don't have to rely on it. Now, because the Green New Deal, solar panel, windmills, and electric car batteries, we're going to be relying on Chinese rare earth mining using slave labor in China, and also human rights violations of Chinese-owned mines in Africa. It's a lose-lose-lose all the way across from America, which makes it a love for the progressive agenda because it harms America. And this is what a lockdown was nothing but a government-enforced recession, depression, and this is where they want to go forward with the climate. They actually call for planned recessions to fight global warming.
Planned recessions.
To keep emissions down, yes.
This is, I mean, look, if we ever wanted a picture of fundamentally anti-American government, in other words, we're talking about not we the people, but we're talking about a coterie of globalist oligarchs determining policy for everyone. How is this even possible that we could care about what's going on at Davos or in the minds of some of these out-of-touch zillionaires, or Greta Thunberg, God bless her. I feel sorry for that young woman. She's being used by her elders. How does it happen, I guess, that we don't have more robust pushback from conservatives in the United States Senate and Congress?
That's a sore subject. Just last month in May, or I guess 2 months ago now, May of 2021, the Republican leadership in the House, led by Kevin McCarthy, these are the people standing between fascism and socialism and Marxism being opposed. You know what their message on climate was, Eric?
Yeah.
Climate change is a problem and we need a solution. But the Green New Deal has gone too far. We're going to be supporting carbon capture and we're going to plant trees and we're going to all this mealy mally Green New Deal light nonsense. This is who we have on Capitol Hill fighting the greatest threat to our liberty today, you know, next to COVID.
Kevin McCarthy is going to get thrown out on his tuchus.
I hope so.
Oh, my God. Listen, the idea that some of these folks are theoretically our leaders, ostensibly, technically our leaders, they need to be thrown out. We need people willing to speak the truth, who really care about the little guy. We don't have them in Washington. I mean, we've got a handful of them. But when I hear about people like Kevin McCarthy and these others, they really, I would say ultimately they're responsible. I can't blame AOC. She's, you know, Curtis Sliwa calls her all out crazy. I can hardly blame her. She's a kid. I don't know what she's doing. I blame any Republicans who don't stand up to this with everything that's in them. They are the ones that should be targeted. They should be primaried. They are destroying this nation. They are destroying the nation. They're the last line of defense, and they're cowards.
I've always said my problem isn't with AOC or the Chuck Schumers or the Joe Bidens. Our problem is with the people who are supposed to be defending the side of science and freedom and its Republican Party. And I worked in the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee during Obama's first term. And I saw firsthand where, you know, Republican senators from, you know, from the Midwest, well, we don't want to be seen as against the environment. We're not going to challenge any of the scientists. We're just going to say it costs too much. And I was like, wait a minute. So you're telling me people are saying we face an existential threat, we're doomed, but Republicans' answer to that is no, we don't. You're bastardized the science. You don't have any debt. It just costs too much. You know, so we face doom. We're all going to die. But you know what? The solution's too bad. We can't do anything. No, you go after it, and you say you go after the entire premise. Number one, you don't see the narrative, and you show that even if we face the climate catastrophe, the Green New Deal would mean we're all doomed. We would all be dead if we actually face it. You would do the opposite of what the Green New Deal calls for. You would not want a top-down Marxist plan that regulated every aspect. You would want the opposite: free market, innovation, technological advancement, and economic growth. The wealthiest economies have the cleanest environment. So it's exactly opposite. Instead, Republicans, climate change is a problem, and we're going to address it too, and we're not going to be as heavy-handed.
By the way, that was a creepy impression of Mitch McConnell. I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you even did that. That was creepy, man. That was Frank Gorshin level impression of Mitch McConnell.
My point is, I hate Republicans in Washington right now. We are not led by anyone who's going to help us fight any of these battles. I'm sorry. Our leadership there is – there's a lot of great congressmen. And I used to work for Senator Inhofe. There's some great senators, but they're not in the leadership, sadly.
Well, I just want to say throw the bums out. I just coined that phrase. You're welcome to it. Throw the bums out.
Yeah, I like
it. Really are. They're far worse than any of the Democrats because they have been elected to fight against this stuff, specifically – by folks like us, and they're not doing it. They've abdicated their role. So when we become a socialist country, which God forbid that'll never happen, but they would be the ones to blame. Mitch McConnell, all the career politicians, they really are guilty. So I'm just grateful to folks like you, Mark, for writing books like this and standing up against this. Green Fraud is the book. Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think, by Mark Morano. Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it.
That old wheel is gonna roll around once more when it does.
Folks, have you done it yet? Have you done it yet? What am I talking about? What am I talking about? I'm talking about this, Food for the Poor. This month only, we have an opportunity to bless those who are struggling in places like Haiti because of the situation in those countries. They have been especially devastated by the COVID situation. So they need our help now more than ever. If you give $37, that feeds a kid for 6 months. That is how staggering Food for the Poor is as an organization. They have warehouses on the ground. They have supply lines. They are already there. They just need our money to make it work. And that's why they come to us on this program, because they know we have generous audiences. Now, Albin and I want you to go to MetaxasTalk.com.
Yes.
And to click on the banner and to give whatever you can. There's also a phone number. But I just want to say, we really need you to step up early in this campaign, please. This is it's an urgent situation. I will simply say that $111, which for many of us is not much, is able to feed three kids for 6 months. Yeah. That's how far your money goes. So please go to MetaxasTalk.com. click on the banner. If you prefer to call, you can do it right now, and we hope you will. 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE. We've got to say this. We, just because we want to, we're giving away three grand prizes. Now, a grand prize is an embarrassing amount of swag and stuff and whatever. We're giving away three of those. So no matter what you give, doesn't matter what the amount is, anything you give, you're going to be put in the hopper, and we're going to pick out three grand prize winners. We also want to say anybody who gives $500 gets what?
Yeah, this is great. A video from you.
Oh, a personalized video.
That's right.
From me.
Yeah.
Wishing whoever you want a happy birthday or whatever it is. Now, obviously, this is a fun thing to do for somebody. If you're already going to give the $500, this is just the way we want to bless you.
Yeah.
Anybody who can give $1,000, you get two of those.
Yes.
And
yes.
A visit to the studio with as many human beings as we can cram in here. If you don't want to come to New York, and we can't blame you, you can send friends. You can tell friends who live near New York. We already did this. Go in there with you and your family of 12. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
We just want to bless you. I finally want to say there are people, obviously, who can give tax deductible $10,000 to Food for the Poor. Again, this is the organization's been about as vetted as it gets.
Yeah.
We want to encourage you. If you can do that, this would be a great time to do that. You're investing in the future. You're laying up for yourselves treasure in heaven, which Jesus said we ought to do. The only question is exactly how. We'd like to recommend this. You can call 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE, 844-863-HOPE. Now,
yes,
Albin,
yes,
we should mention this.
Oh, yeah.
I think I mentioned this the other day, but I'm not sure. This is a big deal. Fox News refused to air. Mike Lindell is doing a cyber symposium in a few days to encourage hackers to show that what he is alleging, that this election interference by foreign countries, which would be basically like declaring war in America. He's saying, like, if it didn't happen, show me. And if you can show me that I'm wrong, I'll pay you $5 million.
Right.
Now, he's doing this because he wants clarity. Okay, you don't have to agree with him, but every American has to agree we should know what happened in the election and we should clear up any questions, right? Fox News refused to air his ad on that. So I want to say on this program, anytime anybody does that, plays that cancel game, we need to hit back. So I'm asking you, for the sake of the nation, not for Mike Lindell, support him by going to MyPillow.com. Use the code Eric. Go to MyStore.com. You can buy most of my books at MyStore.com. Use the code Eric. It's important that we do whatever we can whenever somebody is being treated this way. We should stand up for each other. You don't have to agree with people you stand up for. This is a principle. It's an American principle. And don't forget, of course, Nutramedics.com. Use the code Eric. Don't go away.